Welcome to the German Genealogy Girls podcast. I am your host, Ursula Krause from Berlin, Germany. Join me as I dive into German genealogy. You will receive first-hand information on the best resources and techniques, German history, and all you need to know when it comes to German research. And now, let's get started. Welcome to the very first episode of the German Genealogy Girls podcast. I'm so very excited and I have so much to talk to you about, but I first want to start with introducing myself. My name is Ursula Krause, also known as the German Genealogy Girl. I live in Berlin in Germany. I'm a professional genealogist and the founder of Rootseekers Genealogical Research and More. Obviously, I'm German and actually, I'm 93.75% German and a little bit of Swiss, thanks to my Swiss great-great-grandmother. And hopefully, one day, I will be able to find out how she met great-great-grandfather Carl. My only connection to America are my great-great-great-grandparents, who immigrated to Illinois in 1855, leaving behind two of their oldest sons. And they had actually gone bankrupt and were seeking a better life in Illinois. So there actually is a German and an American line. And I found the American line through putting an ad into RootsWeb, which was answered not 21 months later, but 21 days. So that was really exciting, and I think it simply was meant to be. My ancestors were mostly from Prussia, that is Pomerania, Brandenburg, and Silesia. But there's also a little bit of Mecklenburg and Hesse and Saxony if I go back to the 15th and 16th century. But all of them kind of ended up in Prussia. And as Prussia was a country that was more or less built on many immigrants coming in from Germany and from Europe, that's nothing strange, really. So if you have Prussian ancestors, they might have come from different places. So, that's me. Wait, one more thing. I am working hard to get all these pesky English prepositions right, and every once in a while I kind of get it wrong, so I apologize for that in advance, and I'm working on it, and I know that a lot of you will be sending in some emails telling me about what to do better, and I'm thankful for that, so please go ahead. I'm learning, great opportunity for me, so please do so. Before I start, I would like to send a big thank you to some fellow genealogy podcasters who have been very helpful with their advice, and also thank the many people who have been incredibly supportive behind the scenes. Now let's get right to why we're here, and that's the German Genealogy Girls podcast. What is it that this podcast is all about? I actually have many things to talk about, naturally all of them connected to German genealogy. I'm going to talk about German history because I think that this simply is very important to know German history and it will make your research much easier. We're going to talk about archives and also some online databases that are coming up. We're talking about records, a different kind of records, records available online and only at the archives. We're learning German because if I struggle with these English prepositions, I think it's only fair that you learn a little bit of German as well. So I'm not going to spare you that. We have some tips on methodology. We will be talking about events connected to German genealogy. And we will be talking about traveling in Germany. And I know that many of you have visited Germany or are planning to visit. So I'm going to give you a little piece of advice and also for those of you who want to do research in Germany while they're here. And I'm also will be having guests, mostly genealogists or from special interest groups and genealogical societies. So they will provide valuable advice on German genealogy. So I'm really looking forward to that. What else is there to say? Yes, I'm going to be planning on broadcasting monthly. There is a website to go with this podcast, and it's called GermanGenealogyGirl.com. And there you'll find everything I've been talking about and even more interesting information. There is a Facebook page called German Genealogy Girl and a Twitter account named German Gen Girl. They didn't allow me to have German Genealogy Girl because it's too long. So it's only German Gen Girl. Okay, so I think that was all I wanted to say as an introduction. And I think now, finally, let's get going. I'm very happy to welcome my very first guest, and it's Luana Darby from Lineages by Luana. And without her, this podcast would have never come to be, and she was extremely helpful with developing this format and supporting me. So a big thank you to you, Luana.
And welcome to today's show. It's so wonderful to have you as my first guest.
It's great to be here.
How about that you introduce yourself? I know most of the people out there know you, but there might be a very few who don't. And maybe you all would also like to share a little bit about your ancestors with us.
I would love to. My name is Luana Darby, and I live in the Salt Lake Valley of Utah, close to that big old family history library. And I have a company called Lineages by Luana. I do some research and consultations here in the Valley. Most of my ancestry is Germanic, my grandmother coming from the Mecklenburg area, and the rest of my ancestors from all around the country, north, south, east, west. I really do love doing research in the Germanic Empire. I also do some Palatine research. That's an area I specialize in, and that's for those who are coming from the Palatinate or the Rhineland area, and some from Switzerland, actually, coming into Pennsylvania and the East Coast in the 1700s.
Thank you, Luana, for sharing this with us. I think this was really interesting. Okay, now that we've talked so much about us, I think it's time to dive right into German genealogy. Let's just start with looking into what's going on in the German genealogical community. And of course, this is something very exciting I can talk about, and that's the very first International Germanic Genealogy Conference, and initiated by the International German Genealogy Partnership. And it's taking place in Minneapolis, the end of July, 28th till 30th. And the motto is Connections, International, Cultural, Personal. It is hosted by the Germanic Genealogy Society from Minneapolis. You can find all the information on the website of the International German Genealogy Partnership, and that's iggpartner.org. And you can also find that link on my website, GermanGenealogyGirl.com, and you will find all the information you need, all the lectures that will take place, and all the speakers, list of speakers, and also how to register on the iggpartner.org website. So this conference definitely is the place to be when you're interested in German genealogy. So, Luana, I assume that you will be taking part as well?
Yes, I'll be there and anxious to listen to all the different speakers coming from all over the world. I think that this is going to be a wonderful conference going forward for those who have German genealogical problems and questions.
Yeah, they have incredible, interesting speakers and knowledgeable speakers, and it's going to be really, really interesting. And we're actually talking about that in my next podcast, and I'm going to have Kim Ashford as my guest, and she's in the executive committee, and so she will have a lot to talk about. I will be there as well, of course, and I will give three lectures there, and one of them being on how to work with German directories, which does sound easy, and some are very easy to work with, and some are not at all. The Berlin directory, for example, is rather complicated, even for Germans. So I'm going to speak about that. And with new directories coming online nearly every day, it really is necessary that we take that up and look a little bit deeper into that. And I'm really, really looking forward to sharing that with others. Of course, I also want to listen to some lectures. So we really have great speakers there. And one of them is Roger Meinert.
Oh, wonderful. He's one of the best lecturers out there.
Yeah, and I'm really hope he's going to be speaking about the census records, or I know he will be speaking about the census records. So that is definitely on my list of the lectures I want to listen to. And we have other really interesting speakers there. So I'm going to be busy, but of course, it's also going to be wonderful to meet all my colleagues and all the many other researchers. A lot of them I only know through Facebook. It's really going to be interesting to meet them in person. So I'm really, really excited about that.
I am as well.
So let's see. What else do I want to talk about? One thing that I want to mention is a new web, or new, it's 1.5 years old, but maybe not all of you have heard about it. And it's a new database, and it's called Archion in German. What it's called in English?
Archion.
And it's the database of the Evangelical Church of Germany. But unfortunately, not all evangelical regional churches or church archives are taking part. So we can't really say that this is for all evangelical church records. So Saxony will not take part. Thuringia does not take part. Neither does the church archive in Magdeburg. And Oldenburg doesn't take part either. So that's a bit sad, but I really do hope that they will make up their mind and maybe join a bit later. But partly, for example, Thuringia and Saxony, they don't even have everything filmed yet. So there you still have to go to the countryside, to the little church and the parish, to go to the parish office and look at the paper copies, at the books. But soon, in a few years, we will have everything at the archives, and then maybe they will make up their minds and join Archion. You will find the link to Archion on my website, germangenealogygirl.com. And yeah, Luana, I know that you work with Archion as well. So what can you tell us about your experience with it?
Well, I really do love the website, and it's getting up and getting started. So if you haven't found something on Archion yet, keep coming back, because they put more and more things on it daily. And I have found that the resources are fantastic, but there's a couple of things, a couple of tips you need to know when working with it. And I'm sure Ursula has also noticed a few oddities or unusual things that you have to do to work with the records that come on Archion.
But what you need to know, or what is good, so before you sign anything and pay, and unfortunately Archion isn't too cheap really, you can check. So you can also browse. So you just put in the name of the town that you're looking for and browse and see what they have. So sometimes they haven't uploaded anything yet. So then you'll just have to wait and come back later. So maybe you simply didn't find enough for a yearly subscription. So then they also offer a package of 20 days over 1 year. So you can just start with that. So it's cheaper, and then see how far you come and how much books they upload later. Unfortunately, they have a regulation on the number of downloads you are allowed to make. So that's 600 downloads a year if you have a yearly subscription. So that's not too much, I think. And unfortunately, the downloads are in PDF format, which I find rather sad because, I mean, JPEG is much more convenient to work with, don't you think, Luana?
Oh, I definitely think so. I think that documents, when we get them in JPEG, we can brighten them up. We can maybe darken an area that's harder to read. So definitely, it would be easier if they were in JPEG, and maybe that's something that's coming in the future.
Yeah, I really, really do hope so. And also the size, it's rather unusual. So you can either have it in, if you want the entire page, it's really small. So if you make a printout, you can hardly read it. Or you can just copy parts of the page and then you have to kind of put it together, which I find very hard to work with, really, especially if you make an outprint and you put it together in your file with your ancestors, and then you always need a magnifying glass to really look at the page. So I hope that they think, maybe think that through and change it. So, but I know that there are many people complaining about that. So who knows what will happen in the future.
It's definitely a website we want to keep our eyes on.
Oh, definitely. And it's growing with every day, just as Luana said. And if you look at the news section, and you will find that link on my website, you will find every day what they added. So this can really be something that you can be watching and maybe look at it once a week and see what's coming. And then, I mean, you always have to see that it is much cheaper and much easier to sit there in your PJs at your desk and do some searching. And you don't need to go on a plane and go there and book a hotel and everything. So it still is very cheap compared to that. So I think it's a great site, and it's very, very easy to work with, to understand how it works, I think. And thankfully, some of the regional churches even decided not to take their old films and have them digitized, but take the books and have new films made from it. So they have excellent qualities. But not all churches did. I know Brandenburg, for example, they're taking the old films, and the films are like 30 years old in very poor quality. So the quality is even going to be less. So that's very saddening, because all my ancestors are from, or nearly all my ancestors are from Brandenburg. So there I am. But I live very close to the archive, so I can go there and have a look myself. But that's rather sad. But if you look at the records of Württemberg, for example, they're one of the churches that decided to film new versions. That's excellent quality. Same for Kurhessen-Waldeck, the northern part of Hesse. So things are really looking good. So it's definitely worth
to take a look into it.
Okay, so here we talked about Archeon, and of course, before you can start searching in the database of Archeon, you need to know exact place where to search, and of course, you need to know the religion. But sometimes you simply don't know that, so you know neither the place nor the religion, and you need to find out from records in America.
But Luana has some great advice on how to find out what the religion of your ancestor is in her methodology tip. Now let's just listen to it.
It's time for a methodology minute, a chance to understand the how-tos of German genealogical research. And now sit right back and we will take you through the process step by step.
About 1 in 4 Americans have Germanic ancestry. German research can be challenging at times, especially when searching for vital records. To be successful in discovering these all-important birth, marriage, and death dates and locations, you will need to know 2 things, a religion and a place of origin. Knowing your ancestor's religion is important because church records are the largest and most significant source of vital information in Germany prior to 1876. Today we will learn how to determine your ancestor's religion
in clues that exist in records on this side of the ocean. Let's consider a moment the predominant religions of Germany. In most cases, your German ancestors were of the evangelical, that includes Lutheran and Reformed, Catholic, or Jewish faith. Each of these religions had similar records that followed families throughout their lives, documenting birth, marriage, and death. Familienbücher, or family books, are genealogical summaries, or what we may call family group sheets, often listing parents, children, and sometimes grandparents. These family books are available for both evangelical and Catholic parishes, and can also be found in some Jewish records. Now that we've covered the religions and records of your Germanic ancestors, let's see which records created in their new home may provide additional clues. Obituaries, in both English and German language newspapers, may list a burial location in a church graveyard, a funeral service in a local church, or even mention an ethnic or religious fraternal society assisting with funeral arrangements. These are clues that may not be found in other records. Remember, finding a clue to a specific faith here will often tie you to a religion in the old country. Follow up on every lead available. Chronicling America, the historic newspaper program created by the Library of Congress, provides a German language and ethnicity search option on their website to find those difficult-to-find newspapers that have been digitized. Local libraries where your individual died will likely have copies of newspapers on film and may be able to tell you what other newspapers served that community over time. Cemetery headstone inscriptions can also offer clues by engraved symbols signifying membership in a fraternal or an ethnic society. Your Guide to Cemetery Research by Sharon De Bartoldo Carmack is a fantastic guide for headstone symbols. Marriage certificates will also list the name of the pastor, priest, or rabbi. Follow this religious leader to find a parish or a congregation where your ancestor may have attended. Records at this location may provide a village or a city where your individual was born or resided before arriving in the new country. Recently, I was able to locate members of my extended family in records of the Trinity Lutheran Church in Cleveland. My family lived only 2 blocks from this predominantly German-American parish. Once I determined that I had found the correct parish, I began to scan the records. Baptismal and marriage records in these church books listed previous residents in Germany for parents listed on baptismal records and for both bride and groom on marriage records. These were records from 1853 to 1911. Check records of the immigrant aid societies in your ancestors' location. Immigrants, when deciding on a location to settle or a method of travel once in their new country, tended to seek out others with similar experiences and background. The German Immigrant Aid Society had chapters from New York to California. These types of societies also existed within the religious community. Google is often your best tool to locate these types of records, as they can be archived almost anywhere, from local church files to state and local historical and genealogical societies. Take a few minutes to see if you can discover your ancestors' religion and maybe, just maybe, a place of origin as well.
This was our Methodology Minute on German genealogical research. You can also read about it on my website, GermanGenealogyGirl.com.
Okay, Luana, I think that this was so interesting and I really learned a lot from this tip. I'm under the impression that very often Germans change their religion when they came to America. Isn't that so, Luana?
Yes, often when the immigrants came to the United States, some of the towns would be far away from each other, and they would just have to choose the nearest church. Sometimes you'll find the Evangelisch or the Lutherans coming and attending a Methodist church, or the Catholics attending an Episcopalian church. It really depended on who was closest to them and was close to the religion that they had back home.
Oh, that's interesting. What I found so very interesting from your tip is the one going through the pastor.
Yes. A lot of times you'll notice on marriage records or other records given for a family, there might be a pastor or a rabbi or a priest noted. And if you follow one of these gentlemen, you'll often find the church and then other records that may give you the tips to leading you back to a place of origin. And those are the two things we need the most, a religion and a place of origin. And sometimes it's right there on a document that we've looked over many, many times, but never given a few more minutes to who was that pastor, priest, or rabbi.
Yeah, so it's really every single word on a record can be important.
Absolutely.
One more thing that was in my mind, because my great-great-great-grandparents immigrated and left Germany in 1855, and both of them did not return, but died in Illinois. And I was not able to find anything, and the local genealogical society thought that it might have been a traveling pastor there, so they might not be a church book. Now, what would I do then?
Well, traveling pastors or circuit riders would often attend to several different towns or villages around the area because some of the towns didn't have enough money to support them at once, and they would take their records with them. Often these records would end up in an archive or maybe a historical society. We're still finding them more and more each day, but it's definitely a place to look. The local archives in the area most often will get them from family members who have found them when going through a lot of different boxes that they may have had from their ancestors. So they're not commonly found in one place. You have to look in lots of different places, but those records are available, and some are available on film at the Family History Library as well.
Oh, wow. So that means I shouldn't give up hope?
Nope. I think we should look at everything and unturn every stone to see if we can find that information.
Oh, that's really, really good news. So I'm probably going to have to take a deeper look into Illinois. Okay, well, thank you so much for this tip. And I think, and I'm sure that our listeners will find it very helpful as well. And I think that we have learned so much, and it's just time to take a break and just to lean back and to listen to a little piece of music. And actually, we will be listening to Händel. And Händel was not an Englishman, as many think. No, he was born in Germany, and he was baptized in a tiny town that was called Giebichenstein. And Giebichenstein, this was where his grandfather was a pastor. As a matter of fact. And my ancestors were pastors there as well. So that's why I connected. So I always feel that I'm kind of family with Händel, which of course I'm not, but it would be cool if I was. But you have to dream. So just enjoy the little piece of Händel. Just relax, close your eyes and listen to it and think about your ancestors. And those of you who are listening it while driving, please do not close your eyes. Just focus on the road. So I'll see you after a short break. Thank you. Welcome back from this little break. It's time to do a little bit more genealogy. And in this part, I want to talk to you about a project called Janus Projekt. And the partners of this project are Ancestry and German archives, libraries, and offices of civil records. And you might have noticed that many German civil records are now available on Ancestry, and it's getting more and more. And all this is a result of the collaboration between Ancestry and these German partners. So this is the deal. Ancestry digitizes certain files for free and is allowed to use these records on their site. And the great advantage for the German partners is that the files finally get digitized, which is something that they don't really have the money for nor the manpower to really take care of this project. So they get digitized files in return, which they then can use in their offices or put on their computers and so. And so if there's a request coming in, it will be much easier for them and much faster to answer as well. But of course, thinking as somebody who loves old books, the main advantage simply is that the books will be preserved and will not be used anymore. And I've worked with so many original books that were more or less falling apart. And I know, Luana, that you made exactly the same experience.
Oh, definitely. I have used records, for example, in Stettin in Pomerania, and I was given a record that went back to the 1720s or 1740s, I can't remember, but they gave me the original records bound in leather and didn't even ask me to put on gloves. I was a little bit worried that after too much use, these would be gone. No one would be able to use them anymore because they would crumble. So I'm all for this wonderful digitizing of the records and putting them online for people to use and to access.
Yeah, I'm very happy for this initiative as well. Now, you probably will ask yourself, who are these German partners and will I find some interesting information in the next years? And it's pretty easy to find out because they have a website. And on these websites, under partners, they list all the partners they're working with and also the records they are digitizing. So the website is janus-project.de, and you can find that link on my website germangenealogygirl.com, and it's called a link of the week 9 from 2017. So it's pretty easy to find, but you will also find it in the show notes so you can have a look. Talking about civil records, I think it's time for a little bit of German history. Let's go back to the years 1870 and 1871. The Franco-German War takes place between France on one side and the North German Confederation on the other side, and the Confederation is led under Prussia. And it is also joined by several other German states. The North German Confederation at that time has 22 member states, and that already covered a rather big part of Germany. The war actually ended within several months with the German Confederation and their partner states winning. And what happened then is that the other states who weren't members of the Confederation yet joined on January 1st, 1871. They had been talking about that in November already, so they really joined in January, which means that there is kind of a German state because all the members, all the partners are now one. At the same time, a German constitution comes into effect, and we can say that this is the beginning of the German Reich. There is a very academic discussion about this in Germany, about exactly how did it begin and when did it begin. But, I mean, it was kind of there. So I always see it that it did start in January 1871. And as Prussia was the dominating part in the Confederation, the new emperor, King William I of Prussia, was crowned as the new German Kaiser on January 18, 1871. Now, this did not happen in Berlin, as one might think, Berlin being the capital of Prussia, or even in Germany. No, it did happen in France. It actually happened in the castle of Versailles, which many saw as a humiliation of France. And that would later get Germany into deep trouble, because, of course, the French did not forget about what the Germans did that day. But that's not what I really want to talk about. What I think is important to know is that we have to be aware of two things. First of all, there was no German Reich before 1871. There were only several independent states, kingdoms, duchies who worked together or sometimes did not work together. And every state had their own legislation. And it was first after January 1st, 1871, that we can actually talk about Germany being a country. And the second thing that we need to remember is it is a time of severe changes in law and administration. Where there were different states with a different legal system before, these many systems now need to be harmonized and transformed into one. And there are many new laws that will be passed as well, and many new regulations being established. And I would like to give you three examples that will be very important for your research. Well, first of all, there is no German civil law. So every country has their own civil legislation. So it takes about 29 years to work on a unified civil legislation. And it is first on January 1st in the year 1900, 29 years later, that we have a new and uniformed legislation, for example, family law, that is divorce or adoption. This system is still in place until this very day. But if you go back and you have a divorce or adoption or something that has to do with family law or with civil law, you might need to check which legal system you need to work with when you want to dig deeper and understand what happened. The second big thing that happened was the introduction of civil marriage in March 1875. Before, civil marriage was not possible. The couple could only get married in church. Now, that's not really a big problem, but what happens if the couple is of a different faith? Then they simply needed to find a pastor who would marry them, either a Catholic or an evangelical pastor. That's easy in a big town like Berlin or Hamburg. But it's getting really tricky if you live on the countryside and you really have to look for a pastor who is willing to marry you. But even that could work out. But it gets really tricky if one of them is a German of Jewish faith, because then you need a pastor or priest and you need a rabbi and you need them to agree to marry you. So that's really, really, really difficult to find. And mostly, that led to that one part had to convert to another religion. That was mostly the Jewish part, who then became Christian. Now, with the introduction of civil marriage, this now is possible. It is possible for one being Jewish and the other one being Catholic or evangelical to get married. The third thing I want to talk about is that civil registration was incorporated in Prussia on October 1st, 1874, and in the entire Reich on January 1st, 1876. Before, it was done by the church, and they kept track of the population. Also, the baptismal record, for example, could be used as some kind of ID. So these are the three big things that's happening. There are many, many, many more. We could only talk about that, all the things that happened in the 10 years after the German Reich was founded. But these are the things that will really affect your research. Now, you might say, what is this woman talking about? My ancestors are from the Rhineland. I have actually worked with civil records before, and that was way before 1874. And you know, you're right. There actually were civil records earlier than 1874. To understand that, we need to take another step back in history and go to the year 1797. And this is when France starts to occupy parts of the Rhineland. And then later, with Napoleon having invaded the entire Germany and Prussia in 1806-1807, he brings with him the French Code Civil. And the Code Civil has civil marriage and civil registration. And so sometimes you will actually find civil registration only in the year 1810, 11, and 12, like in Magdeburg, for example. And then it stops. Napoleon's rule didn't actually take too long. And when the German parties beat Napoleon in 1813 and things go back to what it was before Germany was invaded, some German parts actually continue with the German registration, with the civil registration. And that, for example, was the Rhineland, Bremen, and Lübeck. So it was first with the incorporation of the civil registration in 1874, in 1876, until these kind of civil records were withdrawn. And that is the reason why some parts of Germany have civil records from 1798 on, while others start with civil registration in 1874 or even 1876. Luana, I know that you have worked with these former civil records, the one that we find in the Rhineland before.
Yes, those go back quite a ways. We have some of those early holdovers from the Napoleonic era, and they're wonderful. Most of Germany doesn't have them until later, but in the Rhineland area, we tend to find those records go back quite a bit further, and they're just a wonderful treasure for genealogists to find. And some of these archives have put them online and are accessible for us to use now from our homes.
Yeah, and some of them are in French, even.
Yes, there are records in French. In some of the areas, you'll find records in three different languages. You'll find them in French or German or Latin. And so you have to be prepared to see something a little bit different. And the Family History Library through FamilySearch.org has a little help button. And sometimes you can ask for help on those records to have somebody help you read them.
Yeah, and sometimes you really do need that help. I mean, even professional researchers sometimes get crazy over some kind of handwriting or some kind of words. I've seen records where they have a little bit of Palatine dialect in, so there are certain words that you don't really understand in High German. So these records can be rather tricky. Also, these records don't show the faith. The early civil records don't show the faith, those who were who came to be under French government, while the modern ones, the ones that came up after 1874, they actually do show the religion. So that brings us back about to Luana's methodology tip that you simply need to know what faith they have. So if you work with the early German civil records, you will have to check the church records as well, both Catholic, evangelical, or even Jewish, to find out which faith they actually have. Now we talked about civil records and we talked about the offices of civil records, and I think it's about time for German for genealogists. And I have a word for you that I think is very, very important when you're looking for civil records. Learn German with the German Genealogy Girl. Here's an important German word you will need to know when doing research. And for the very brave of you, I even included a little piece of German grammar. Enjoy! Today's word is Standesamt, a very important word for German genealogists. Let me first spell it to you. Capital S, T, A, N, D, E, S, A, M, T. Standesamt. It consists of two words, Stand, status, and Amt, office. If you're looking for civil records, this is the place to go. A Standesamt is the office where every birth, marriage, and death that takes place in this very town is registered. It is the civil registration office. Every town has its own Standesamt. Some cities even have more than one. Berlin, for example, has 12, one for every district. As in Germany, civil marriage is mandatory. This is also the place where marriages are performed and the family book is kept. For those of you with a love for German grammar, please know that the gender of the word Standesamt is neuter and the plural is Standesämter, which makes it das Standesamt and die Standesämter. And now you know what a Standesamt is. This was an important German word you will need to know when doing research. You can also read about it on my website, GermanGenealogyGirl.com. So, now you learned a new German word and even listened to a little bit of this pesky German grammar. I know Luana knows a lot about der, die, das as well.
Oh, most definitely. It's a challenge because if you know another language, usually you only have feminine and masculine. And the Germans just have to throw in the neuter of das to kind of mix things up. And sometimes it's even difficult for those of us who read it all the time to decide which one it is.
Yeah. And even Germans have some difficulties every once in a while. So it's not as easy for us either. But we're very picky on our grammar, and German grammar is a bit complicated. But, I think that you should give it a try anyway, because it is a very beautiful language, at least I think so. So don't give up. It's hard, but it's definitely manageable. Well, we talked about ancestry before, and I still have something to talk about on ancestry, and that is the very famous Rhineland folder. And the Rhineland folder holds loads and loads and loads of great records. Unfortunately, not all of them are from the Rhineland. Or what is your experience, Luana?
I've had the same experience. The Rhineland folder is great. However, not everything there is from the Rhineland area. And you really need to go into Ancestry through the card catalog search that's right there on that front page on the right-hand side, and use a keyword to find the area you want. Oftentimes, we look at a folder and say, well, my people in Berlin weren't in Rhineland. And all of a sudden, you find out that actually those records happen to be in that folder. So sometimes you need to just put it in the keyword search and see what folders pop up. Ignore the titles of the folders and see what's inside.
Yeah, I found the most interesting records in there. Polish files, for example, that I would never really have searched in the Rhineland.
And I also found, by coincidence, the records of my ancestors, and they were from Frankfurt on the Main, which obviously is not in the Rhineland either. So it's always worth, as Luana recommended, always go through the search bar and then see what it brings. Talking about Rhineland and maybe a Rhine tour, I bet that many of you have been in Germany or plan on traveling to Germany this year, maybe. And some of you might do a cruise on the Rhine and look at the old castles. Some of you might go and do research. Some might do both. And I think it's always interesting maybe also to leave the path, this typical tourist path, and just maybe look at something new and try something new. So, Luana, do you have a little advice of what to do? Because I know that you're a frequent traveler to Germany, and you have a lot of tips regarding that.
Well, I do love coming to Germany, and I do love doing research on site in some of the archives and churches. One of the things you might want to do before you head off to Germany, especially if you're doing research, is to find out a little bit about the archives you're going to be visiting. Unlike the United States, you're going to find that some of these archives are closed on a certain day. Typically, it's Monday that they might be closed on, but some of them might have a Thursday closing or partial days on Friday. So you really need to look online first and determine the days and the hours, because sometimes it will be all day long. Sometimes it will be in the afternoon or just the morning of a day. So research your archives or church to make sure that it's open when you're there. I took a trip not too long ago, and I had forgotten what day of the week it was and ended up in a city that I wanted to visit the archives. And I noticed when I got up to the door, it said it was closed. And again, I didn't look ahead of time and say, oops, are they closed on Thursday? But one of the nice things is when you do that research and go out there and enjoy the time, enjoy the people, enjoy the culture, enjoy your surroundings. Take a few minutes away, take a lunch break, a walk around the area to really get a feel of where your ancestors lived and what kind of things they experienced. Take some pictures to add to those wonderful documents of the areas that they lived in. I find that this adds so much to my experience.
I also think that Germans are really helpful and friendly, and they can always give you a good piece of advice of what to look and what to see.
Oh, most definitely. If you're lost, that's another good time to ask someone. Many of the people in Europe have had some English, and they'll understand some basic information from you. And to be able to guide you, you can ask them, what's the best place to eat in town? Or can you help me find this park or maybe this monument I'm looking for? They're very helpful.
And the Germans do a lot of walking, don't they? They don't drive that much as people do in the U.S.?
No, they don't do a lot of driving. I find that most of them either walk or take the German rail. And the German rail can take you a lot of places in Germany, and you need to get to know a little bit more about the German rail system, Deutsche Bahn, and look at their times and where they go. Now, they're not going to go everywhere. They're not going to go to that tiny little village up in the mountains. You may have to take an extra bus or a taxi, or even rent a car to see what you need to see. But for the most part, the larger cities, you'll find that the German rail service, the best in the world, I have to say. It's just wonderful to take
that.
It, and you can get around most of the country. You're welcome. I really enjoy it. It's almost always on time, and it gets you to where you need to be, when you need to be there. And I'm excited to come back.
Yes, and I'm excited to have you visit me. So I'm really looking forward to that. But for those of you who want to go, maybe go into the small villages that Luana mentioned, and you want to go there to the parish, do call them in advance. Do check first if they are willing to help you. Because very often
the pastors don't really have time. Often there isn't even a secretary or a clerk who takes care of that and nobody to help you there. And once they're filmed, they usually say that you should go to the archive and take a look there. So you might not have access to the books. Also know that in some areas you will not be allowed, you might be allowed to take a look at the books, but you will not be allowed to take copies, not photocopies, and you're not allowed to take pictures either. So you just have to copy them by hand. And sometimes the office only is open for 2 hours. So you might check all that in advance and ask what you will be allowed and what not. And you will probably sit next to the clerk, so you will not be able to do something behind her back. And you shouldn't, of course, do it that either, because they're very strict on that rules. So you should definitely follow them. If they say no pictures, then it is no pictures. So you should really, before you go there, send them an email or give them a call and ask about if they have time, if they're willing to have you, and the way you are allowed, you will be allowed to do research there. So, but otherwise, it's certainly worth it just looking at these old books and the special smell. And it's wonderful. Working with original books is wonderful. It's one of the best things you can do. Even if it's more convenient, maybe sitting at the archive with a reader and then making a print out right away, but it's nothing better than really working with the original old church books. Or what do you think, Luana?
Oh, I love the smell too. You're right. The smell, and to touch these old leather books and to look at them, it's wonderful. Sometimes you'll be able to take your computer too and type that information in there. You don't have to always write it by hand, but they're always willing to let you take the information, just not copy it from a camera or a photocopy, but they want to share it with you the best they can.
Yeah, and often they're incredibly nice and helpful. And you can also ask that, and I do that if I'm somewhere on the countryside. I always ask them about the town and what there is. They can tell me about it, and maybe they know a little bit of history or a story that I would like to share with you. So it's always worth just talking to them. So I can highly recommend just going to to the small towns and villages. Yeah. It's really something very, very special when you can really feel it. And it's something that you can't have just by looking at a picture or so. It's really something different to kind of smell the air that your ancestors breathed. Well, I think that we said everything we wanted to say for this month, but of course we could continue for weeks just talking about German genealogy, couldn't we, Luana?
Oh, most definitely. And sometimes we do get to talking and it goes on forever.
Yeah.
And that's all right with me.
Oh, it sure is with me as well. But we have to say goodbye for this time. And I would like to thank Luana for being my guest. Thank you so very much for your wonderful advice and your tips and your help and sharing your incredible knowledge. And I'm sure that it will not be the last time that you're going to be my guest.
Thank you for letting me come on.
Thank you to my listeners for being my guests as well. I really look forward to meeting you in the next episode. Those of you who want to know more about what we said and read a little bit about it, just go to my website, GermanGenealogyGirl.com. You will find all the links. You will find all the information. Everything we talked about here will be there in writing, so you can take a look and read a little bit more about it. You'll also find more information. Also, you have the chance to get in touch with me, because I know that many of you have suggestions of what they would like me or my guests to talk about. So I would be very thankful to get a little feedback. So don't hesitate just to go on the contact page and drop me a line. I would love to hear from you. So, and now we've come to the end of the very first, the German Genealogy Girls podcast. Looking forward to seeing you in a month. Goodbye and thank you.
wraps it up for this episode of the German Genealogy Girls podcast. Thank you for joining me exploring the hidden gems of German genealogy. Remember to visit my website at GermanGenealogyGirl.com and learn even more about German genealogy. Until we meet again, and auf Wiederhören!